Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's the 1-2, and that one lifted high and deep into center field. Perkins going back to the track. He runs out of room. It's gone. Jake Berger with a home run just a little to the left of straightaway center field. He puts Texas on the board here at 2-1.
A double Berger, four straight, 15 of 20, seven games over, 2.5 back in the West, 1.5 back in the wild card, and you get the slumping New York Mets starting tomorrow on this radio station. Good morning, Metroplex. Sean, RJ, and Bobby on your official home of the Texas Rangers, joined by play-by-play voice, the man you just heard, the great Matt Hicks on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Good morning, Hicksy. How are you?
Good. Good morning to you guys. How are you?
We're great because in part of this baseball team, probably same for you. Be honest. Corey Seager goes down and the Texas Rangers end up in this position on September 11th. Are you believing it?
No. I mean, come on. I mean, and it's not just Corey Seager going down. It's, so many key players and you know, not just losing a Nathan Eovaldi who was having a Cy Young type campaign, but, you know, all of the position players, Seager, Simeon, Garcia, Carter, losing Sam Haggerty, who was a real catalyst for the offense. So, I don't think you could have envisioned this, and you certainly couldn't have thought about back in spring training. Well, we're going to get some journeyman minor leaguer who's not even in the system be the guy that, carries the team at a most critical time in the season against the club with the best record in baseball. I mean, these are things that just you don't think about, but happen. And it's one of the beauties of the sport that, you can, on paper, take a look at a matchup and say, they're probably not going to do very well. And then you go ahead and sweep a team like Milwaukee. It's just been kind of crazy here these last few weeks.
Are you prepared to tell Bochy, to tell the injured players to just stay injured? And you want to start these guys the rest of the way?
You don't want to mess with a good thing. I mean, that's part of baseball's history, right? You know, you get on a winning streak. You want to continue to do the things that you do. So, some guys, put on the same clothes every day. Some guys go to lunch at the same place every day. Whatever superstition that they have, you don't mess with a winning streak, right? So you're tempted to do that, but, we've gotten – good news here recently on, the developments of Adolis Garcia and Marcus Simeon certainly isn't giving up on coming back at some point in the season. And, hopefully sooner rather than later, we get Corey Seager back. But you're right. If all of that happens, who goes?
Matt, we've been talking about the idea of team chemistry and how, maybe these young guys are just ignorant of the pressure and they're able to play free and it's infused all this energy. We've been trying to debate this. How much do you think clubhouse chemistry and generally just the culture can impact winning when you lose guys and have some of those issues?
I often think maybe it's the other way around too, right? That winning creates a great chemistry in the clubhouse. Guys go out there, they do their jobs, and things are feeling pretty good, and it ends up, showing in results on the field. The chemistry for this team has really been pretty consistent all season long, whether they've been winning or losing. Guys show up, they do their jobs, they are accountable. And they, look to each other for support. And so I don't really think that the chemistry has changed a whole lot throughout the course of the season. But I certainly think that winning on a consistent basis helps that chemistry. And, you show up, you know, you're looking forward to playing. You know you've got a pretty good chance of winning regardless of who's in the lineup, and I think that kind of feeds on itself.
Matt Hicks joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Okay, so Hicksy, like, when we all keep trying to draw parallels, I think, to, hey, 2023 wasn't feeling great necessarily at the end of the season. They get into the postseason. They go on this incredible run that they did. Around this same time of the season, how do you think this Rangers team fits that comparison to the 2023 team? And what are some other areas you may say, you know what, that it's different because that 23 team still had this going for them at that time?
Yeah, and, you know, you still have, obviously, guys that were here 2 years ago and remember that. And there's not any magic formula to how it's done. It's not like you're coming out, you know, getting on some highway and going, oh, yeah, this is where we were. Let's do this again. This is unique compared to 2 years ago, other than the fact that you do have, you know, some guys that were here and remember what happened. So it's just like, you can draw comparisons, but every season is different, and it sounds cliche, but every game is different, and the situation, you know, is a little bit different as well. And, you know, what's really helping here, not just the fact that the Rangers have, you know, won whatever it is now, like 14 of the last 18, to get back in this picture in a really strong way, but, you know, Houston's not playing all that great right now, and Seattle has been sort of on an even keel, but a little bit up and down, but, you know, not really on a tear. And so, you know, we've got a situation here where you've got five series remaining, and, you know, the Rangers don't play Seattle, but have an opportunity because they play the Astros coming up at the end of this road trip. And so an opportunity to gain some games on them. But then you go home and you're playing the Marlins and the Twins, you know, the two teams that aren't really playing for anything right now. So, you know, where 2 weeks ago or so, it seemed like it was a tall task. But now, because of the way the ball club has played, things are definitely within reach. You know, I think if you win the five remaining series, there's a really good chance that you're probably in this thing. And it doesn't matter how you get there. It's just getting there, and that's what the 2023 team, you know, showed everybody, that, you know, we limped into the postseason 2 years ago, and then something just sort of magically clicked, and we couldn't lose on the road. And so, you know, I don't think we're ever going to see anything like that again, but, you know, we might see something similar to how the team got into the postseason 2 years ago.
Matt, in the last five wins, the closer has been Maton, Armstrong, Martin, Armstrong, Maton. Playoff starts tomorrow. Who's the closer?
If the playoffs start tomorrow, then we're seeing what we're seeing right now. I think that Sean Armstrong gets the bulk of the chances. But just like Bruce Bochy said before the win yesterday over Milwaukee, that, you know, depending upon where we were, you know, in the other team's lineup, that you might see Armstrong go maybe even in the eighth inning. And that's what we saw yesterday. And then Phil Maton ended up getting the ninth. So for whatever reason, they liked that matchup of Armstrong. And in the eighth inning yesterday, we were at 5, 6, and 7 in the order. And, you know, Sean's been so good against right-handed pitching, but the way things were lining up for the Brewers in the eighth inning yesterday, you know, they had a lefty and a switch hitter at 5 and 7, respectively, in the order. So, it's, you know, he's even getting out lefties right now. And so I'm not so sure why that particular threesome was the matchup for Armstrong. But right now, it doesn't seem to matter. Sean is pitching with extreme confidence here for Maton in the last three or four outings. But his curveball has been incredibly wicked. And he seems to be pitching with more confidence right now. Robert Garcia is on a run of something like, I don't know, 9 or 10 consecutive outings in which he's not given up a run. He's not figured in the back end yet. But, you know, this bullpen has been very reliable for the most part all season long. And so, you know, if the playoffs were to start tomorrow, I think we'd see the same thing we've seen here in the last, you know, week or so.
The great Matt Hicks joining us here. Rangers play-by-play swim timer and chess instructor? You're already the most interesting man on the Rangers broadcast because of your hip-hop knowledge and your pink pants and all that. I don't think I've ever heard anyone bring up chess instructor.
Yeah, I did that. Now, it's been a while since I've done that. But when before I joined the Rangers, when I was working in Corpus Christi, the school that my son was attending, the elementary school, needed some help, and they needed somebody to help with their chess club. And I volunteered, and there was nobody else that was volunteering. There was another father of a kid that his son was in the chess club. But they needed to have regular meetings, and so I volunteered to be there for those meetings and to tutor these kids and to help with the scheduling of them playing. And so for, I think it was 3 years, I helped out the Windsor Park Elementary Owls chess team.
Wow.
And they actually, you know, we helped to kind of grow the club a bit. They did pretty well. My son was, you know, playing chess at the time too. But it was a lot of fun helping those kids out. I used to play competitively before getting into the baseball on a regular basis, and so it was a lot of fun.
What was your favorite move?
What Ranger players did you take on certain players or people in the organization?
You know what, I have played, and it's funny. There's a running joke because Jeremy Jeffries not only played, but he had his own, like, really expensive chess board.
Oh.
And he and I got together, I forget what season it was, and we would play a game where when I had the opportunity to be in the clubhouse, you know, we would make the moves, but we would suspend the game, and then, like, the next day that we were able to play, we would pick it up, and we never finished the game. It's, you know, sometimes you can sit down and you can play quickly, but Jeremy was one of those guys that wanted to think about his moves, and I'm the same way. So I'm not real good with speed chess, but he's one of the guys that I played, but we never had a result. And there are a number of guys on the team that will play, and one of the guys I've talked about playing against that is on the club now is Marcus Simeon, but we've not been able to sit down and go at it. Simeon told me that with the year that he was with Toronto in spring training, that the Blue Jays had a chess tournament all throughout spring training.
Wow.
A lot of guys play.
Matt, if this type of run was happening in football, I feel like it would be easier for us to talk about what the coach is doing, right? They're running the football. They're blitzing more. Same thing in basketball. The rotations have changed. They're running more in transition. You guys talk to Bochy every day. He's obviously a Hall of Famer. Explain to us the Bochy effect during this run and what you've been picking up from him and his greatness.
You know, just a calm, steady, guiding hand. He's not one of these managers or leaders that is rah-rah, gung-ho, coming into the, you know, the players' portion of the clubhouse and, you know, giving speeches and stuff like that. You know, he just sort of, I don't want to say he removes himself because he doesn't, but he does give the players their space. But, you know, I think that Boch is a real interesting combination of old school and new school. I think that Boch, for many years prior to this analytics era or whatever you want to call it, was a guy who thought that way. And so, you know, he very much embraces the information that's available to him and to the players and sort of helps to fuse, you know, that so that these guys can be at their best in terms of preparation for each game. But, you know, I think that there's a big part of Boch that's all about, as the game progresses, letting the game come to you and doing what the game asks you to do. Remember when we had Ron Washington as a manager, he would say that often, you know, what is the situation? What is the game asking you to do? And I think Bruce Bochy is definitely, you know, a proponent of that kind of baseball. So while the analytics may tell you that over the course of a season, this is the way to approach things, each game is different in what it is that you should be doing. And so you know, I think right now what we're seeing is not just, you know, a bunch of guys going up there and trying to slug on offense, but guys going up and figuring out what do I need to do in this at bat. And when I come up, you know, I'm not just hitting in a vacuum here. There's a certain situation and I should be looking, you know, for this pitch in this particular spot and trying to do this, as opposed to, okay, I need to be trying to, you know, drive the ball here regardless. And it seems to me like, you know, one of Bochy's strengths is figuring out and putting together a lineup that works on a nightly basis. And I think that's one of the big areas where, you know, he's impacted this ball club, you know, in a positive way.
Thank you so much, Hixie. Love having you on. Let's keep it rolling. Have a great call tomorrow night.
Sounds good. Thanks.
The great Matt Hicks from New York on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Have we uncovered the conspiracy in the NBA? And you know I'm not a conspiracy guy. I think we have one. And the latest details on the Charlie Kirk shooting next on The Fan.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
8:40 below the belt. Babe Laufenberg has moved to Fridays at 9:20 so he can get an even more game film previously.
Boy, he was. I've got. We were. He sent me a text the other night.
It's like Babe's still working at CBS 11. His sleep.
Get out there at midnight, 1 a.m. Yeah. I'm a night owl.
I'm telling you, he sent me like an 11:45 p.m. text the other night of him breaking down one play for 4 minutes. He's like, now you see here, and he's like drawing on the screen. So yeah. So he's spending 11:45 time on one play.
It's like Brian Schottenheimer, who will join us tomorrow at 8:20. Choppy, you have been all over the latest on the Kawhi Leonard NBA story.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack here, and it is getting much, much worse, it seems, for the Clippers. So backstory here, there was a company called Aspiration, which is a tree service, tree planting company, and Kawhi did what they call a no-show job, or that's the speculation that it's a no-show job, and he was paid, you know, almost $30 million for this no-show job.
Yep.
And Steve Ballmer was an investor in this company, but he is saying this is a shady company. He was bamboozled, yada, yada, yada.
And Cuban came out and defended him. He got into a Pablo Torre. He went on Pablo Torre, who's been breaking all these stories, podcast. And basically, Cuban was saying, Steve Ballmer isn't dumb enough to allow this company to go bankrupt. So you saw all this behind-the-scenes information.
And that's how this was all figured out. It was figured out through a bankruptcy filing.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely right. Steve Ballmer has more money than God. He's not going to allow a company that's a little bit in debt, we're not talking billions of dollars, to go bankrupt. He's going to keep funding them.
No, but
unless he didn't know.
If you want to talk about like when things get blown up, like when big scandals blow up, whether that be in sports, politics, entertainment, whatever else, it is usually the thing that does it is like you forgot to turn off the light switch or you forgot. It's always some basic thing.
Yeah.
So there's a back when he was with the Raptors, there's a report that he had demands for the Raptors. So this is what the report states were the demands to Toronto. A trade for Paul George, an extra $10 million in sponsorship income, bluntly stating, quote, we don't want to do anything. Partial ownership of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Whoa. And a big hockey fan.
I know. And ownership stakes in other companies affiliated with MLSE, whatever MLSE is. That is...
So basically, Kawhi proposed the same no-show job with the Raptors.
Yeah, essentially.
That makes it look bad for Kawhi and the Clippers.
Makes it look very, very bad for Kawhi and the Clippers. And, you know, you've seen...
Because this is a common request.
Apparently, it's a common request. Stephen A. has said, so Uncle Dennis is his guy.
Yeah.
He said if there is a request to be made,
yeah,
it's coming from Uncle Dennis. Uncle Dennis will look for every possible avenue to milk more money here.
Yep.
And look, I mean, I guess that's his job.
Sure. Ask for ownership stake of whatever.
Ask for everything.
Yep.
Ask for everything. The worst they could say is no. But we are looking at this as potentially a real, real problem for the NBA because, you know, as Pablo said to Mark, you really want me to uncover your skeletons? Like, every team, I think, would be petrified of this because it appears that, you know, Kawhi's camp asked the Raptors to do the same thing. Now, they reportedly said no, but how many teams have been asked and how many have said yes throughout the course of history?
You asked the question last night, like, where's this story gone? Why isn't this the main headline everywhere?
Yeah, week one of the NFL.
You got the NFL, but also it's just making, and I'm not a conspiracy theory guy usually, Bobby, but it's making me think this is a common practice thing. And I think you wrote in the email, honor among thieves.
Yeah, so this was over at The Ringer. It was Howard Beck had written about this where he was kind of recapping everything that we've learned. And then he was asking around to just various NBA sources about, hey, what's going on with this practice? What's going on with the accusations? Is this something that happens? And he pointed to one instance in particular that a team had told him about where they said, now this is different though. They said a team needed to come up with an extra $150,000 to persuade a free agent to sign. So the GM arranged a $150,000 deal between the player and a local business requiring the player to make a certain number of promotional appearances. The team ended up getting the player because of it. So, but that's a little different because it doesn't say there that they were paying the money and it was a shell organization and he didn't make the promotional appearances. But one of the quotes here from an NBA executive was, there's sort of honor among thieves, an inbounds area that you can do things. Everyone sort of knows what everyone does. I don't think anyone has ever tried, to my knowledge, to give a player $24 million to $48 million under the table. So that would be where it might take another step up.
Predict what the final outcome and punishment will be, if any. Adam Silver yesterday said it's on the NBA to prove the guilt.
Yeah, it's a due process, right? Yeah. And they have to do the reasonable doubt, all that stuff. Well, look, if this is found to be true, he has to become a free agent immediately, right? The contract's void. You're going to have to figure out something.
What I'm really asking you is, does the NBA let it get to a point of being found guilty because this is really wink, wink, common practice?
Yeah,
does this get buried?
I do think they're going to investigate to a point.
Yeah, they're getting their outside firm.
Right. They're not going to go deep dive into this because I don't think they truly want to know. If this was a one-off situation.
Yeah.
The easy thing is Ballmer's out.
Yeah.
That's the easy thing.
Because wouldn't we get quotes from other owners by now, like off the record screaming
right
for the Clippers to be lit up with punishment? Wouldn't we have already gotten that? Why?
I think so.
Why haven't we?
Yeah, probably because exactly what you're talking about. This is an instance of they probably all do it to some extent and they don't want it getting out there. And that's, I don't know, that's the vibe I got from Silver yesterday, the way he's talking about it. Because he's like, guys, look, we gotta prove stuff. And he's like, honestly, I'd never even heard of it. What was it called? Inspire? What is it? Like, I mean, it was just acting like, I've never even heard of this thing. He's so clearly trying to make it go away. He doesn't want it to stick around. I think they'll fine him $100,000 or something and say, yeah, but it wasn't what you thought it was. And ultimately, they'll try to bury it. If they were to do what they need to do, it's the Joe Smith deal, which the Timberwolves got a $3.5 million fine and they had to give up 5 first-round draft picks. So, I mean, if you do inflation, that's a $6 million fine and 5 first-round draft picks.
There's, it appears SI just put this thing down here. A new wrinkle is that another part owner of the Clippers paid the star millions while circumventing the cap through the same company or a different company. So now it's like,
I've always wondered, though, like, why didn't other owners just say, look, here, we're giving you the max on paper and I'm writing you a check because that's
got to launder that money
easier.
That money's got to be found somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, the IRS is going to look at If you got like professional athletes, they're going to look at how much you're spending and how much money you're funneling.
So he was owed $1.75 million no-show payday. It was running late, so the other owner of the Clippers invested $1.99 million in the team in that company.
And this is being reported?
This morning. Pablo just posted this morning.
How much, though, if you're a Clippers fan, are you like, boy, they will put chairs in front of doors. They will create shell companies. Like, you do got to feel like the Clippers are trying to undo their curses.
The arena?
Yeah.
Like, with that wall?
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah. I actually love that idea from Ballmer. So, like, I mean, look, I at least, if I was a Clippers fan, I'd be like, we got busted. That sucks. But I appreciate they're trying to do everything right to get us where we need to
Toilets!
Go.
Toilets!
What's the latest on the Charlie Kirk shooting?
An FBI agent says that the positioning of the assassin, where he was in retrospect to an open-air parking lot that was right behind that building, and being 200 yards away and being outside basically the secured area, could allow that assassin to get miles away within 5 minutes.
Wow.
And the highway system there, they had mentioned that if you go west out of Salt Lake and Provo, you have 8 hours of Nevada desert ahead of you. And if you go east, you go to the mountains. Like, you go further into the Rockies. Like, it's tough. Like, there's not a whole lot going on out there. Like, yeah. You could go miles without seeing a single person.
Yeah, I heard this
road.
Woman on Fox yesterday talking about the terrain and who knows, it could be tougher to find out in the hills and the mountains.
I believe that's called the loneliest road in America, is that one that's west. It's between Salt Lake and, I guess, Tahoe. I think they call it the loneliest road in America.
Are you all starting to think, with more and more details that come out, how truly coordinated all this could have been?
Yeah,
by maybe multiple parties. I don't know.
It doesn't feel like it's just somebody who, walked up.
Was radicalized.
Yeah, went Sixth Semper Tyrannus and ran up and did something. This feels like there was a lot. The timing of the shot, where the shot was, how precise it was, the videos that are out there right now of somebody in basically all black.
I mean, he's definitely a pro. We know that, who shot.
Or military, ex-military, somebody who's used to it.
It's someone who knows their way around a rifle. So with all that, and then, all right, is that just somebody who wanted attention who claimed they did it? Or is that coordinated where somebody goes immediately after, go run up to all the cops and start taking credit for it so that they think they've got somebody, they're not even looking? Like, there's a lot here, and there was a lot, there's a lot at stake with what Charlie Kirk was doing. Both sides view that as a lot at stake of just, you were talking about capturing the minds and the souls of the next generation of voters.
This guy was a 31-year-old who, lifetime, long-time political figures all referenced as a friend that they, kept in consistent contact with. Glenn Beck or Donald Trump Jr. It doesn't matter who it is. Like, the big dogs on every network and super famous political figures all talking to this 31-year-old. Like, we're talking about a mega star in the world that he was in.
Yeah, if you want to talk about, think about Rogan influence, okay? Rogan influence with a lot of political money behind you actively getting you to touch voters. So Rogan naturally gets the influence with what he does. Imagine that kind of natural influence then with political money, millions being thrown behind you. There was a lot at stake for both people in this.
I mean, and going to college campuses, which he did a lot. He went to college, and then he did this.
That was the whole point of Turning Point.
2 billion views, I think, with last year's college tour.
And there was this thing he did, and I've seen other people do it. It's called Surrounded. It's 20 versus 1. You have 20 people of opposing views, and then
debate.
And then you debate. You got a clock right there, and he did that. It was, and I see a lot of other people do that. And it's a very cool.
Yeah, that's what he's being lauded for a lot over the past 12 hours. Is he just wanted to debate?
That's it.
He's willing to debate you.
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Why one stat from the opening week of the NFL greatly increases Kevontae Turpin's case for MVP?
Hell yeah!
That's next in B-Lo.
The Belt.
Right here on The Fan.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby knows ball. Hey, let's talk ball. We're the ball knowers and we just talk ball.
Hey, it's a Ball Knower Thursday here in Below the Belt, which is sponsored by D&M Leasing and Window Nation. RJ Choppy is not going to be able to stomach this year's MVP in the National Football League because it's going to be Kevontae Turpin, baby. Yeah. I'm going to tell you why here in just a second. Before we get to that, Ian Rappaport has given us a firm timeline, sort of, on Brock Purdy. So Brock Purdy, who we mentioned earlier in the show, he will is likely not going to play this weekend. It'll be Mac Jones for the 49ers. His timeline right now is 2 to 5 weeks with a turf toe variant. I don't know if I've ever heard 2 to 5 as a time designation.
No, I haven't either. So normally you say, I'll be there in 10 to 15 minutes. This is the equivalent of saying I'll be there in 12 to 15 minutes.
Yeah, this is like saying, like, pass me the pepper and salt. It's like nobody says that.
Right. Yeah, because nobody needs more salt.
Salt and pepper. That's how you say it, typically. But this is a case where 49ers now are just getting brutalized. You've got the Brock Purdy issue with the injury. George Kittle hits IR, but his new reality show should be coming shortly. They lost all their depth during the offseason. And I had mentioned this in my email yesterday. I am starting to wonder, like, are these the cracks? Are these the San Francisco cracks? Not just in general, like, oh, their time is ending, but is this cracks in their general philosophy? Because if this falls apart for Shanahan and he gets pushed out, which, by the way, total D yesterday when talking about the kicker they let go, Jake Moody.
Shanahan was?
Yeah, he got asked about it, and they're like, you know, the decision that he made, and he went, yeah, it wasn't that tough of a decision. It's just like, dude, he's so flippant and he's so Popovich-like without any of the titles.
Yeah.
I like him as a coach. I find him irritating as a personality. But Kyle Shanahan, if things were to fall flat here, think about the coaching tree that it's produced. Saleh flopped with the Jets. McDaniel is having a time of it in Miami right now. I don't know what the hell is going on with the Houston Texans. D'Amico Ryans hasn't had it all fall apart yet, but last year was disappointing and they looked really bad the other day. And if Kyle Shanahan then gets pushed out, it's like, okay, well, what exactly did you guys produce? The stuff that the NFL was trying to replicate for the last 3-4 years, where we led astray, we're now trying to copy something that, oh, this doesn't even work. They got lucky with these players hit, or these guys were good. They, you know, the fact that you get Dre Greenlaw or other linebackers to come out and be studs that you picked in the 5th round, you don't expect to hit that consistently enough. But I think the cracks in the 49ers foundation are showing now.
And, man, I think it was Warren Sharp who came out with some training and medical team numbers on San Francisco. They were alarming. And, of course, you got Kittle, who's out for a while as well. 49ers health by season. Number one most injured in 2024. 2023, number 29 most injured. They were 12-5. They lost the Super Bowl. 2022, number 9th most injured in the league. They were 13-4. Lost the NFC Championship game. 2021, they were number 3 most injured. 2020, they were number 1 most injured.
Wow.
2019, they were number 6 most injured.
Yeah, that's not good. And they are the reason that we have the emergency third quarterback elevation rule now, because their quarterbacks couldn't stay healthy in the NFC title game. They've clearly had some issue, whether that be training staff or are they being run too hard at practice or just in general, they've acquired broken players. We'll get an answer on some of this when we see, does Debo get hurt in Washington or is he fine there?
Right.
That number for it being that many years kind of basically in a row, that tells me that might not be on the players. That might be on method or like, overtraining or training staff.
It's definitely not on the players.
They don't just have broken players.
No, it's definitely not on the players. If you're not managing,
right,
you know, fragile players the right way. If you've got a Sean Lee on your roster and you're not doing anything to mitigate that, or the Cowboys at the point they've reached with Dak Prescott, where they've said, hey, you know what, we're just gonna ease your workload. We're gonna back off the gas a little bit. If you're still just stomping on the gas with Trent Williams, going, yeah, dude, go out there. Do what you're doing. Just, you know, go balls to the wall. That's what we need out of you. Then that may be a problem. All right, so why will Kevontae Turpin win league MVP? Is it because he's going to have 1,500 yards receiving chop?
I mean, he might have that in over three years.
He's not really going to win league MVP, but what he is going to be, he will be this.
He news, will if J.J. McCarthy can win NFC Player of the true. Week for a quarter. Right.
This news coming out of week one is great for the Cowboys. So the NFL kickoff rate, which they've been trying to boost, they've been trying to get it up, and it's a big thing where Roman Oben, when he was with the from the league office, he was down here in Dallas a couple years ago, and he was talking to some reporters about it, and he was like, the big thing for Roger is no wasted plays. I don't want to play on in our game where people feel like, all right, here's the play where we check out and we just walk out. That's why the extra point gets moved back, and it's a 33-yarder now. Create some drama. Kickoff, that can't be a wasted play. We need action on every single play. So they've really tried to get, I thought they were going to eventually get rid of the kickoff and just say, all right, if we don't have action on it, we'll get rid of it. Instead, they come up with this XFL hybrid where you just reduce the collisions, and they tried the, all right, you kick it out of the bounds or you drop it in the little landing zone and all these different ways that you can do it. They hoped last year that would help. It didn't help as much as they wanted it to. It was up slightly, but it was not up dramatically.
You want a toxic masculinity, RJ Choppy opinion?
Yeah.
Hit it.
I'm sorry, I was reading that. The last part of that.
I thought he was just like seeing how toxic he wanted to be, and he was just like, how bad do I need to be with this?
I saw some Gronk quote out there. I was trying to read it, and I just lost
it. Do you have any idea what we're talking about?
Not the last part, no.
So, NFL kickoffs.
Kickoff.
The kickoffs. It's the dumbest thing in the world. I can't stand this kickoff. Did you hear what they were talking about at the... So, we talked about it yesterday. The O'Connell pull it out.
Hey now.
Come out. All this the, for G-Bag of the Day, Pam. Right?
Come out of the end zone.
Yep.
Apparently, they were talking on the Manning cast, and I forget who the guest was at the time, but they all said, just kick it out of bounds. Take the penalty. Give the ball at the 40, mm-hmm. right? Because this rule is just move the ball back to where you had it like 50 years ago, or is it like the 25? The worst thing to me, nobody, and I mean nobody, wants to see you get to the Super Bowl this year, all amped up, those flashes going left and right, and then see that guy kind of weasel up to the ball and just bing, bing. No, you want to see him bomb it. Nobody wants to see a changeup for the first pitch of game one of the World Series.
So you,
right?
To you, the first opening moment needs to be that kickoff.
Just a boom.
Through the end zone.
Through the end zone. Show how much I have saved up my testosterone for a week, right?
Women, to see a legs. No return play, a no just action.
Bomb it. Bomb it. No, I want the reaction. I want the return. That's why I'm saying move the ball back.
Okay.
But you don't want the coffin corner kicker as a punter. Stupid. You want the guy to just boom the punt out of the end zone and give it
so
at the 20?
I can't stand it. It's just
that's ridiculous. All right.
No, just kick the damn ball. So kick it as far as you can. Throw the fastball. I want to see that fastball hit 104. I don't want to see a changeup on the first pitch of game one of the World Series.
Are you embarrassed?
Last year returns were up slightly from previous year average. It did not make the impact that they thought it would. So they said, all right, we're going to move it to the 35-yard line is the touchback now. And in the first week of the 35-yard line touchback, teams returned 118 of 156 kickoffs, which is a 75.6% return rate. The last time the NFL had a higher return rate for a single week was 15 years ago in week 17.
Yeah.
And last weekend's games were particularly rare, ESPN notes, compared to the other opening weeks. The last time the NFL had a return rate higher than 50% in week one was also 2010 when they had 78.1%. So this is a situation where some of my favorite players when I was growing up were Dante Hall, Devin Hester, like the electricity of a kick or punt return.
Yeah.
I hated that had gotten taken out of the game in recent years.
I agree.
And when you've got somebody like Kevontae Turpin who can threaten and can be a dynamic threat for you and can, you know, really impact field position, this is huge for the Cowboys and a boost for, hey, any team that's invested in a returner in the last couple of years and saw this coming, this is going to be a big boost for them.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, someone on a rules committee, right? Like, if you're Steven and you just signed Devin Hester, like, Does it influence how you try to get the rule passed or not?
Sure. Oh, yeah. It would have to, just like the tush push. It's like, no, I don't like that Philly does it, so it's time to take this out of the game. All right, last note here.
Although Buffalo changed that.
What do you mean?
Because they voted against it, and they do the tush push. So, like, they
don't do it well. Not against the Chiefs, anyway. They're not able to.
They always run to the same side. Left side. Strong side.
Load left. Yep. Just like Barry Switzer. Jadeveon Clowney did visit with the Cowboys yesterday, like we mentioned at the end of the show. Josina Anderson had reported that. She also then reported that he left without a deal. And it says that they are preparing. They're focused on preparing for the Giants. May revisit it another time. It could mean that to me sounds like, yeah, we're good. We don't want this right now. So I don't know if the medical didn't look great or, like Sean mentioned earlier, maybe the money wasn't to their liking. But they've done this before, too. They've brought in guys for visits and then let them leave and eventually boomerang them back. They did this with Malik Hooker, Anthony Barr, Carl Lawson in recent years. But I would have done this after watching him yesterday. He's still a good player.
What happened to Christian Wilkins?
What did happen to Christian Wilkins?
He's out there.
Oh.
He's available.
Yeah. Okay, so that's apparently a lot worse than is publicly out there. That's a problem.
For maybe he has some issues.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it was there's a lot there that has not come out, apparently. And he is a David Mulugeta client, and I don't know that they would work out a deal right now.
B-Lo.
D-Belt.
Every day at this time here on Sean and RJ. Babe Laufenberg tomorrow at 9:20 to preview the G-Men. Let's tap the keg at 9 a.m. Another loss for Bill Belichick. It's RJ Choppy's college football kegger, if he remembers. Next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.